Let's call the Senate Resources Committee to order. Let the record reflect it's approximately 3:35 this afternoon, this Wednesday, February 2nd, 2011. We do have a quorum beginning at my left, Senator Stevens, then Senator Wilikowski, beginning on my right, Senator McGuire, Senator French, and co-chair Senator Wagner, myself, Senator Pascfan. Please turn off your cell phones. Don't leave them on vibrate only. Turn them off because it does interfere with the recording. So if you could do that, would be much appreciated. I would also like to recognize, I can see Senator Giesel in the audience, so welcome to the Senate Resource Committee. I don't see if there's any other elected officials out there, but the purpose of today's meeting is a year ago, the legislature passed Senate Bill 220, and it was a significant piece of legislation, and it was handled out of the Senate Resource Committee last year by the co-chairs, Senators McGuire and Wilikowski, and so Senator Wagner and I thought that it would be appropriate to kind of, 1 year later, where are we, what's happened, how much progress has been made. The purpose of that legislation a year ago was to find ways to lower energy costs, increase greater efficiency of energy usage and increase the use of non-renewable resources. And so we hope we can have a thorough review of Senate Bill 220 today. And so I guess, Senator McGuire, would you like to start off the review of this significant piece of legislation and give us your thoughts?
Thank you very much, Senator Pascavan and Senator Wagner, co-chairman of the Resources Committee. We sure appreciate you bringing this forward, and both Senator Wilikowski and I have been asked to give brief remarks today, just a general overview, because they have invited testimony from agency officials to sort of walk through more of the details of the bill and where they have implemented parts of the Senate Bill 220. I just want to start out by thanking our president, Gary Stevens, who's with us today and was a member of the committee. Frankly, you have the majority of members who are still the same on the committee as they were the last 2 years, but his leadership and financial support of the vision that Senator Wilikowski and I had and members of this committee to put into place an energy policy for the first time in state history here in Alaska, and with it, an Omnibus Energy Act for the first time in state history. It was a very, very onerous undertaking, many days, and to try and get it through two bodies with different viewpoints, two different political parties, and then, of course, through the executive branch with a lot of different goals in mind was really a big accomplishment and something that I think we should all be very, very proud of. It has really moved the state forward, and it keeps us on track and keeps us headed in a direction that we want to be going as a state. Certainly the renewable energy goals, as the governor submitted his report to us, he cited that as one of the main reasons for putting the Susitna project, the hydro project, at the forefront of his agenda, and I know many Alaskans are thankful and grateful for that project to be put forward to consider the possibility of 6 cents and 8 cents a kilowatt hour energy to parts of the rail belt. But there are other parts of Senate Bill 220 that are being implemented that will be discussed by AEA and other members that are benefiting rural Alaska, Southeast Alaska, and other parts. Different incentive programs that we have started in the renewable energy program and in the emerging energy technology program to try and incentivize new ways of getting affordable, reliable energy to Alaskans. And that has been our overarching theme, is that Alaskans do want to live and work in a place where they have access to energy. One last comment that I want to make, Senator Wilikowski is going to make a few more comments. I was asked to keep mine to 2 minutes, and I think I'm just shy of those two right now, is that in the governor's letter to us, and without being critical, I just want to correct one thing so that it's a matter of record. On page 2 of the 12-page document, the administration references that one improvement to Senate Bill 220 would be the creation of a commercial energy efficiency loan program. Currently, the state has addressed energy efficiency programs for public buildings and residential homes. However, commercial buildings have energy efficiency upgrade needs as well. And I thought this was really interesting and just something I want to highlight for a second. One of the things Senator Wilikowski and I did do in Senate Bill 220, as you'll recall, we created and adopted the program for public buildings. And there is a loan program. I want to emphasize for those of you out there watching, only one community so far has applied for these loans right now. These loans are available to you if you are a municipality, a borough, a state agency, any kind of a public facility in the state of Alaska. There are $250 million worth of loans available to you through the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation for energy efficiency upgrades to your buildings. If you're a school, for example, any energy efficiency upgrade that you make is going to lower the cost of energy and get more money into the classroom. We, in light of that, also created as a placeholder a loan program for businesses here in the state of Alaska. Unfortunately, that program was not funded. And Bill's going to talk a little bit about that in a bill that he's introduced. But we'd, I think, welcome the governor's support for that program as a result of this letter. But we're hoping that all of Alaska will look to energy efficiency first before we even get to the supply side. And really just want to thank again the Senate, the President of the Senate, and now our two co-chairmen who have put the results of 220 high on their agenda and as one of the first things that we've talked about. It shows their commitment to the energy policy of the state too. So thank you very much. Beep, beep.
Thank you for the 2 minute comment.
Beep.
Questions.
You mind tell us which community that is?
Fairbanks.
Kenai, too.
And Kenai is, too. Okay, so now we have two.
And I think we have more coming. I've been talking to them as I travel around. I think we all should do that because
yes.
It's a really good program for them to participate in.
In case I misspoke in my opening comments, we are trying to increase the use of renewable resources. I want to make sure that that is very clear, so I did not misspeak on that. So, what's okay? Anyway, thank you, Senator McGuire, Senator Wilikowski.
I'll
three or four minute comment.
Keep it very brief. Again, I'd like to thank the co-chairs for the opportunity to take a look at how the administration is progressing on Senate Bill 220. As you know, as all of you know, the omnibus bill had many components, including some of the ones Senator McGuire talked about. The one in particular was the energy efficient loan program, which will, you know, hopefully more communities will seize the opportunity to take advantage of this. It is $250 million that's available. I just think people don't know about it. And we had estimated that would create several thousand jobs all across Alaska and save tens of millions of dollars across Alaska when fully utilized. We also, as Senator McGuire mentioned, put a provision there for energy efficiency revolving loan fund to provide. Actually, we had a loan fund for small businesses. We have a provision to expand the state's heating assistance program to provide additional help for Alaskan families when oil prices soar. We had a provision, which we'll hear about today, requiring the state to retrofit 25% of the state buildings over 10,000 square feet, which will save the state, we believe, millions of dollars in a very short term, and again, create jobs. And we also created, this was Senator McGuire's, something that she really pushed was the Emerging Energy Technology Fund, which I think we'll hear a little bit about today as well, to provide grants to test new energy technologies in Alaska. And I'll just make one pitch, as Senator McGuire did. We do have a bill that we co-primed. It's Senate Bill 32, and it's asking the state to capitalize the Alternative Energy Loan Fund to the amount of $10 million. I think that'll be a good start to help our businesses get some low-interest loans to retrofit, weatherize their businesses. And I, again, thank you for the opportunity, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. We now have the pleasure of welcoming from the Alaska Center for Energy and Power its Executive Director, Gwen Holdman. So please come forward and welcome to Senate Resources. Please state your name and, you know.
Okay. Thank you. For the record, my name is Gwen Holdman. I'm the director of the Alaska Center for Energy and Power at the University of Alaska. I'd like to start by congratulating Senators Wagner and Pasban for your new positions as co-chairs of this committee, and also for thanking the entire committee and especially Senators Wilikowski and Senator McGuire for their really excellent leadership work last session in shepherding SB 220 forward. I think that I can speak for the general stakeholder community in saying that as a whole, SB 220 has set a very firm statutory foundation for implementing state energy policy, and we really are appreciative of your hard work on this. Today's hearing is about progress on implementing the various components of that bill over the last several months. I think I can also say that we appreciate the time that you're taking today, early in the session, to go back and revisit this really important landmark piece of legislation. I think it's very important to go back and see what's been done in the interim and, you know, where we are making good progress and what might still need to be tweaked a little bit moving forward, or where there might need to be some clarification of legislative intent in a few areas, potentially. As a university employee and as the Alaska Center for Energy and Power being housed within the University of Alaska, our role is really to provide you with information to make wise policy choices. And I have to also commend this committee for taking advantage of us as a resource, maybe more than any other committee in this building. So we do appreciate that opportunity to work with you and hope to do so in the future. In reviewing the bill for today for the first time in a half year, it was a good opportunity, I think, but it also really struck me as what a really small role myself and my organization had in crafting this, you know, overarching omnibus energy bill. And I think that's probably the case for many of the stakeholders that you're probably going to hear from today. It just really it underlines the effort that you guys made in traveling around the state, meeting with stakeholders in all kinds of venues and communities over the last really 2 years, and then putting together what really is an a la carte menu of disparate ideas into this single overarching omnibus energy bill. So that's the kind of thing that we are really counting on you to continue to do moving forward as well, really providing that overarching vision and understanding how all these different interests and needs fit together. In contrast, you know, a lot of us are down on the front lines. We're the ones that are every single day trying to reduce those costs of energy for our communities, for our residents, for our businesses, and our industries. In my case, I spend a lot of my time lately considering whether small-scale nuclear is a viable option for Alaska. That's something that came directly out of SB 220 and some of the provisions related to nuclear energy. I work very closely with the Alaska Power Association and their utilities on looking at ways to improve diesel energy efficiency or delivering energy-related curricula to schools through partnerships with Renewable Energy Alaska Project and Alaska Housing Finance Committee. And, of course, Alaska Energy Authority is probably our closest partner in all of our projects and programs that we work on. And you'll be hearing from all of those later on. I want to continue to encourage you to pick up on where you left off last session. We're looking toward you to have that bigger vision to be able to see the proverbial forest through the trees and make sure that we're managing a diversified portfolio of energy resources, both renewable and fossil-based, and determining the appropriate mechanisms for funding projects and programs as we move forward. There were some unanswered questions left on the table during the process of shaping SB 220, and the legislature chose to approach at least some of those by seeking more information. This information has come in many ways in the form of reports from various offices and agencies. I think you're going to be hearing about some of those today. I also wanted to mention one in particular, which is related to the issue that was raised last year on how to improve coordination among the various state energy functions involved in energy-related activities. And the legislature specifically tasked the governor's office to recommend improvements to the existing structure. Senator McGuire already referenced the report that you received earlier this week entitled Energy Report to the Legislature, submitted by Governor Sean Parnell. In it, Governor Parnell advances the concept of an Energy Policy Coordinator, or EPC, to coordinate energy programs and policies between state agencies, the governor's office, and the legislature. We look forward to seeing how this EPC role develops. and want to reiterate how important a coordinated approach is to many of the stakeholders to help identify areas of duplication, streamline, and understand what resources are still needed as we move forward. Senate Bill 220 also leaves some loose ends that need to be tied up when it comes down to the bottom line. The next steps are really going to be about money. We need to work to make sure that the programs developed or expanded in SB 220 do not become unfunded mandates. Many sections of SB 220 develop programs but do not in themselves provide a funding mechanism for those programs or initiatives, particularly as related to education or outreach, as well as data collection and reporting, which is something that's of special interest to the Alaska Center for Energy and Power. There are other examples of unfunded programs. For example, SB 220 established a program for commercial energy efficiency retrofits, but that program was not capitalized, as mentioned. So the Emerging Energy Technology Grant Fund was probably the most popular part of SB 220 from a public relations standpoint. I had the honor of working with Senator McGuire and her staff on developing that program, and I think that it garnered the most public testimony of any individual component of this bill. It received a one-year funding increment of $2.4 million. The Denali Commission contributed $3.1 million to the program last year and has planned an additional $2.4 million in their budget for this year, but that's contingent on the state both continuing the program and providing matching funds or better. So that's important to keep in mind. ASAP's worked very closely with the Denali Commission to develop this pilot program that served as the basis for the Emerging Technology Grant Fund. In what's now called, I think, round zero of the program, the Denali Commission funded 11 projects totaling approximately $8 million and which are all actively and aggressively moving forward. And basically every single one of them is on time and on budget, so we're very pleased with that. ASAP is both managing the program and collecting and analyzing the data from individual projects to make recommendations for future applications for these kinds of technologies. Now, as Alaska Energy Authority really picks up this program, as outlined in SB 220, we look forward to continue to work with them as they develop the program at the state level. There are other programs that are not explicitly mentioned in SB 220 that will require some attention, including the Renewable Energy Fund that was originally scheduled to sunset next year. There may be opportunities to work with the Alaska Energy Authority to improve this program or add a complementary loan component moving forward. Similarly, programs like the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation Home Weatherization and Rebate Program have been warmly received and have seen high demand and quick paybacks on that investment. We should continue to invest where successful models like this exist. Another example is the PCE program, the Power Cost Equalization Program. There are communities that are slipping through the cracks on reporting, and many feel this program could be restructured to more effectively meet its objectives of levelizing energy costs between our rural and urban communities. Perhaps now is the time to revisit this program, especially as we consider, as a state, potentially an unprecedented investment in energy and infrastructure for the Rail Belt. SB 220 was widely viewed as a first step to implementing state energy policy as laid out in HB 306 and signed into law last year as well. The policy included well-known goals for achieving 15% energy efficiency improvement by 2020 and 50% renewable energy for electric power generation by 2020. However, I'd like to also draw your attention to another example of a policy that was mentioned in two separate sections in the two-page House Bill 306 language, but only partially addressed in SB 220. I'm quoting, "It is the intent of the legislature that the state remain a leader in petroleum and natural gas production and become a leader in renewable and alternative energy development. And secondly, the state should invest in applied energy research and development of alternative and emerging technologies, including university programs, to achieve reductions in state energy costs and stimulate industry investment in the state." This is something that the Alaska Center for Energy and Power strongly supports and speaks to the larger objective of incentivizing economic development, which is ultimately a big part of what we are trying to accomplish. Alaska can and should become a leader in improving extraction technologies for tight reservoirs and heavy oils that are known to exist on state lands, and where development could result in significant revenue generation for the state and improve throughput of the Trans-Alaska Pipeline into the future. Other examples include development of methane hydrates, coal to liquids and gas to liquids technology, ocean and river energy, underground coal gasification, high penetration wind, and advanced storage technologies. This is quite a menu of resources and technologies, but these are all areas where Alaska either has a unique need or a unique opportunity in terms of a world-class resource and where These are all areas that the University of Alaska and the Alaska Center for Energy and Power, as part of the university system, are currently conducting research in partnership with private sector companies. We would welcome the opportunity to continue to work with this committee to find ways to position Alaska as a leader in these areas and as a means not just for meeting our own energy needs, but for generating new economic opportunities for our residents, businesses, and industries. We recognize that as a committee, you now are setting your priorities for the next 2 years, and there are many pressing concerns and issues that are at the forefront of your minds. There are big decisions to be made during this session, ranging from oil tax structure to the Susitna Hydro Project to the future of the gas line and issues with natural gas supply in Cook Inlet. While those are all critically important moving forward, we ask you continue to implement and shape Alaska's energy policy from a comprehensive perspective and take into account the needs of all Alaskans, both urban and rural. Thank you for your time, and we continue to look forward to work with you on these efforts. So, thank you.
Very much thank you. Are there any questions for Gwen Holdman? Seeing no questions, again, thank you very much. We now have Alaska Power Association, Marilyn Leland, and I believe she's in the Anchorage LIO.
Yes, I am. Thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Please identify yourself, and then you may proceed with your presentation.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Marilyn Leland, and I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Power Association. Alaska Power Association is the statewide trade association that represents the electric utilities that supply power to about 500,000 Alaskans from Barrow to Unalaska through the interior and south central and down the Inside Passage. I appreciate the opportunity to comment on the status of the Alaska Sustainable Energy Act, SB 220, today. SB 220 was a bill that APA actively supported last year. Having said that, though, there are a number of provisions in the bill that do not directly relate to the electric utilities, so I'm going to be limiting my testimony today to the portions that do. Also, in a number of cases, there are provisions that we supported, but I'm not aware of the status of the implementation, and I'm unable to comment on their status. Agencies, local governments, and school representatives would be better able to address these provisions. But going into the bill, looking at Section 1, we were pleased to see language that helps to remove the barriers to the development of nuclear energy as an alternative technology in Alaska. This is an important technology that needs to be considered for use here, and I expect this language will help. However, I'm not actually aware that any nuclear projects are underway as a result of the new provisions yet. Section 14 deals with the Emerging Energy Technology Fund. We believe that the inclusion of this section was very important. There's no silver bullet that's going to help everyone in Alaska solve their energy problems, and I commend the legislature for creating this fund and including an advisory committee populated by experts in science and engineering fields. Alaska Power Association has a designated seat on that committee, which has been filled by Eric Erickson, who is an engineer with Alaska Electric Light and Power in Juneau. The committee, as I understand it, has had its initial organizing meeting at which a draft request for grant applications was reviewed. That RFA was issued on January 7th with applications due March 2nd. Once the applications are received, I understand the advisory committee is going to be meeting again to review them and make recommendations on the grant awards. But I do want to mention one concern that I have about the advisory committee. The bill does not allow a business or organization represented by a member of the advisory committee to actually receive a grant. I understand the reasoning behind this provision, but I think you ought to consider removing it. Alaska has a very small pool of organizations and individuals who are qualified to serve on the committee and who have the technical ability to develop emerging technologies. Rather than simply prohibiting them from receiving the grants, I think it might be better to allow them to apply for the grants, but prevent them or prohibit them from actually being involved in any way in the deliberations or voting on the recommendations of their grant awards. I think we would only be hurting ourselves by not taking advantage of someone's expertise on the committee just because they may want to apply for a grant at some time. Section 42 adds a provision allowing the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation to issue bonds in an amount not to exceed $250 million to make loans from the Alaska Energy Efficiency Revolving Loan Fund. We believe this is an excellent provision, although I am not aware of the status of the bonding, expanded bonding capacity, and obviously AHFC would know that. You also have asked what we think the legislature needs to focus on now. At APA, we've developed a list of initiatives that we think the legislature should consider. They don't all relate to SB 220, but I do want to summarize them for you. First, develop an implementation plan for Alaska's energy policy authorized by HB 306 last session. As I mentioned earlier, and Gwen touched on as well, a lot of good work went into developing the policy. Now the state needs to actually do the work to make the policy succeed. Second, develop large-scale hydroelectricity for the rail belt and develop renewable energy resources, hydro, geothermal, and wind for other regions of the state. A large hydroelectric project could meet the needs of as much as 75% of Alaska's population well into the future. But we need to not forget the communities that are not on the rail belt. The state should be looking at developing viable renewable energy generation for those communities as well. Encourage the development of Cook Inlet Gas Management Plan for continued gas delivery to South Central. Natural gas is critical to South Central and the economy statewide. Demand for natural gas in South Central is expected to exceed supply as early as 2013. The legislature and the governor need to take a comprehensive view of the situation, develop policies, and ensure coordinated actions. Next, fund the Renewable Energy Fund and the Power Project Loan Fund. The funds are the primary state sources of capital funding for renewable energy projects. Both funds have been woefully undercapitalized in recent years in light of the goals set forth in the state energy policy. Fund a minimum of $50 million annually for the Renewable Energy Fund as authorized, and properly capitalize the Power Project Fund at a level to support the goals set forth in Alaska's energy policy. Next, continue to fund the Power Cost Equalization Program. The very survival of many of rural Alaska communities depends on meaningful relief from the crippling cost of energy. The legislature should continue the PCE benefit at 100% for FY11 and fully fund PCE in the administration's FY12 operating budget. And the last initiative, develop a policy and legislation that expands funding for energy efficiency and conservation activities. Continue to support the highly successful programs of the Alaska Energy Authority and AHSC for home energy audits, energy improvement rebates, and weatherization. In addition, we encourage you to provide commercial energy audits for government, schools, and public institutions and offer energy efficiency and conservation block grants. A bill has already been introduced this session to expand the AHFC's energy efficiency program for commercial buildings. That bill is HB 36. We are very fortunate that we already have a number of successful projects and initiatives in Alaska. Just to name a few, there are Kotzebue Electric's wind farm, Kodiak Electric's Pillar Mountains wind farm and Terror Lake Hydro Project, Alaska Village Electric's wind generators in a dozen of their villages, Cordova Electric's hydro projects, Alaska Electric Light and Power's Snetisham and Lake Dorothy hydro projects, Alaska Energy Authority's Bradley Lake Hydro, and the newly created Alaska Railboat Cooperative Transmission and Energy Company that is poised to do great things in South Central. With the history of these successful projects, I am confident we can do it again. It's just going to take a lot of hard work, coordination between the state, the electric utilities, and other interested parties, and, of course, a lot of money. But we can do it. In closing, I want to compliment you on all of the hard work that went into the development of SB 220. It was an excellent beginning to what needs to be done to solve Alaska's energy's problems, but we're not done yet. Again, finally, thank you for the opportunity to testify today. I've given a copy of my testimony to the clerk here in Anchorage, and I understand that she has faxed it down to you.
Well, thank you very much for the report. Are there any questions of the committee? Seeing none, we, again, thank you very much. And we also have, I believe, at the Anchorage LIO, Hannah Gustafson for Renewable Energy Alaska Project.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Please.
For the record, my name is Hannah Gustafson, and I am the Deputy Director of Renewable Energy Alaska Project, or REAP. REAP is a coalition of over 70 Alaska electric utilities, businesses, consumer groups, conservation groups, Alaska Native organizations, and local, state, and federal entities that all share the goals of increasing the production of renewable energy and promoting energy efficiency in Alaska. REAP would like to thank both co-chairs and other members of the committee for this opportunity to testify on SB 220 today. REAP would also like to thank and acknowledge the work that this committee did last year to secure SB 220's passage, particularly the work of co-chairs Senators Wilikowski and McGuire. The passage of SB 220, along with energy policy that was passed in House Bill 306, provide a landmark from which Alaska can move forward. The state is blessed with some of the best renewable and non-renewable energy resources in the world. Renewable energy, in particular, provides a hedge against the inevitable rise in fossil fuel prices that we will see in the coming decades. HB 306 has set ambitious goals, but attainable goals for the state, and SB 220 contains the beginning steps to meet these goals. Though it has been less than a year since its passage, REAP appreciates the fact that this committee is committed to tracking the progress of this legislation. I'm going to focus my testimony today in two areas. First, I'd like to talk about some of the specific provisions contained in SB 220, and then I'll end my testimony by mentioning some of the issues that REAP hopes this committee will consider as this legislation or this legislative session progresses. REAP was a great proponent of the Emerging Energy Technology Fund that was created last year with the passage of SB 220 in Section 14. Because the Renewable Energy Grant Fund that passed in 2008 was not designed to fund immature or emerging technologies, REAP and many other entities, including the Denali Commission, the Alaska Center for Energy and Power, the National Renewable Energy Laboratory, and Alaska Power Association, recognized that Alaska needed a program to take advantage of the many excellent opportunities we have to develop emerging technologies that utilizes Alaska's vast biomass, river current, tidal, and wave resources. Grants from this EETF will help demonstration projects leverage private and federal monies to accelerate the technology innovation in Alaska, while at the same time providing ways to sustainably provide energy to the state's communities. There's actually a meeting slated to take place there in Juneau on February 14th that's organized by the aforementioned entities, and it's going to be hosting the recipients of the $4-plus million funded by the Denali Commission for Emerging Technologies in what is considered to be round zero of the program that Ms. Holdman referred to, and I would encourage all of you to attend. The Alaska Energy Authority-administered EETF that was part of SB 220 is still in formation, and it's REAP's understanding that issues concerning intellectual property rights and allowable costs are currently being worked out within the advisory committee process at AEA. We still see great value in this program and are hopeful that the legislature will consider funding for the EETF this year. And as Ms. Holdman also mentioned, I do believe there is a piece of funding from the Denali Commission that would be contingent upon a state match. So very encouraging to have that federal funding as a match. REAP would also like to thank the legislature for its commitment to energy efficiency measures and programs over the last several years. Since the appropriation of $360 million for existing home weatherization and rebate programs in 2008, this body has clearly recognized that efficiency measures result in much quicker paybacks than investment in generation resources. The legislature added to the state's energy efficiency commitment last year with the passage of SB 220. In particular, in Sections 9 and 42, created the new $250 million revolving loan fund program for retrofitting public buildings. And this funding will help the state meet that mandate established in Section 17, which calls for the state to retrofit 25% of its buildings by 2020. REAP is currently working closely with the AHFC to educate public building owners about the program, which is important both because it will bring energy savings to the state and because it is also an innovative way to leverage state funds that the state could potentially use to finance other energy infrastructure projects. In addition, Sections 20 through 28 of SB 220 deal with energy efficiency loans for commercial businesses. However, no funds have yet been appropriated for this program, and it's an important piece that still needs some attention. So I'm encouraged to see that brought up this session. One of the things we must find is a way to get commercial lending potentially to get more involved in making these loans, whether it be through education or incentives or both. That brings me to the last point regarding SB 220 that I'd like to address briefly. There are several provisions in the bill that call for state agencies to collect and or provide technical assistance. These include 11, which requires the Office of Management and Budget to work with various agencies to collect and store energy consumption data. Section 16, which asks DOT to consider converting its fleet to alternative fueled vehicles. Section 43, which requires the Department of Revenue to make recommendations on the feasibility of a municipal energy improvements program. And Section 40, which requires the Governor's Office to submit a report to the legislature describing current energy programs and making recommendations on how best to structure and coordinate these programs. All of these efforts are important and in various stages of completion, and REAP would like to comment on the governor's report that was just submitted to you on Monday. The report describes the state's various energy programs and makes the recommendation that an energy policy coordinator, or EPC, in the governor's office be the coordinator and mediator between various agencies and corporations to deal with energy issues. It appears from the report that the EPC will make further recommendations about administrative structure. We believe such a coordinator is definitely needed. However, the consistency in application that the state of Alaska needs over the long term will require that whatever structure is deemed best be institutionalized so that it outlives individual administrations. Accordingly, we believe it may be beneficial for this committee to hold informational hearings on administrative approaches that are being successfully applied in other states. I'd like to end my testimony by giving some areas that REAP hopes this committee will consider over the course of this legislative session. Number one is that all of these energy programs and initiatives, including the ones I already mentioned that are contained in SB 220, need adequate personnel and funding to succeed. That is why Section 40 of the bill, which refers to the governor's report on administrative structure, is so important. If we are to meet our goals, we need a long-term structure that will allow Alaska's programs to function both efficiently and without duplication of effort. Energy is the lifeblood of any economy, and designing and building a sustainable energy infrastructure that will allow Alaska to be competitive in this 21st century economy is a task that will require both energy planning and implementation institutions that are fully supported by the state. If anything, we have too many energy choices and opportunities in the state of Alaska. A well-oiled administrative energy structure can help us understand those choices in context and then execute on the decisions that are made. Number two, and related to one, we need to develop a strategic energy focus so we can meet our goals and play to our strengths. For example, with limited resources, programs like the Renewable Energy Grant Fund may benefit from developing a strategic focus for making grants. One idea that has been discussed amongst the advisory committee is developing an RFP to develop state-of-the-art projects designed for rural applications and then asking applicants to compete for grant funds to build them. Using some of this grant money in this fashion would drive technology, innovation, and improvement. Another such way to drive innovation that has been discussed is for the state to develop a production-based tax credit for renewable energy, where the more energy a project generates, the more the developer is rewarded with a credit on its taxes. Finally, and thirdly, the state is going to keep investing money, is going to have to keep investing money on energy. The dollars invested in residential energy efficiency programs over the last 3 years are already paying dividends, and more should be invested. If Alaska becomes the most energy efficient state in the nation, it will, in the process, become one of the most attractive places for companies to invest. The money invested in the renewable energy grant fund is also beginning to pay dividends as projects leverage private and federal dollars get built and come online. AEA is tracking the number of gallons of diesel that each of these projects is predicted to save over their lifetimes, and even using today's fuel costs, those projects are projected to save communities far more in fuel costs than the state has invested. The state should consider developing a concurrent loan program for renewable energy projects. Indeed, HB 306 names the Power Project Loan Fund as the vehicle to finance projects, but that fund must be further capitalized, particularly for large rail belt utilities who have not seen as much of the Renewable Energy Grant Fund because of the rail belt's comparatively lower electricity prices. Low-cost or zero-interest loans for projects would be nearly as valuable as grants. The availability of loans and other financing mechanisms is going to be absolutely necessary to develop large-scale hydro and other large-scale renewable energy projects in the state. The bonding mechanism that has allowed AHFC to set up $250 million in the revolving loan fund for energy efficiency retrofits is one example that can be examined for financing other projects. The state needs to continue to fund energy innovation programs like the Emerging Energy Technology Fund. There is literally a race around the world to find more sustainable energy systems, and Alaska can use its unique situation to become a leader in such innovation. Nowhere else in the nation has the combination of high energy prices and abundant natural energy resources like Alaska. That combination means that while we demonstrate new technologies here, we can also likely save our communities money at the same time. This program importantly applies to heating and transportation innovations as well, two other vital and overlooked components of our energy needs. Overall, there is a huge demand from communities across the state to diversify their energy portfolios, and state assistance is going to play a very valuable role in making this happen. Energy is arguably the most important infrastructure investment we can make, because without energy, our schools and other public infrastructure cannot function. That concludes my testimony. Thanks again to this committee for all its efforts to help make sustainable energy for Alaskans a reality, and thanks again for the opportunity to testify today.
Any questions? Seeing none, we thank you very much for your testimony. We now have with us, I believe, Sarah Fisher Goad with the Alaska Energy Authority. We welcome you and congratulations.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Sarah Fisher Goad. I'm, I guess, as of yesterday, the Executive Director of the Alaska Energy Authority. I also have Peter Krimp with me. He's our Deputy Director of Alternative Energy and Energy Efficiency Programs at the agency. The prior speakers covered a lot of ground, Mr. Chairman, and I do thank the committee the opportunity for AEA to provide you a status update on the work that we've been doing on implementation of SB 220. I was furiously writing down some notes on some things that we want to cover. I apologize if I jump around a little bit, but I will just start from the top of my notes, and I also want Peter to be able to provide a status update of the EETF program, which was the major program that SB 220 provided to AEA to administer. Gwen Holdman had mentioned the PCE program with respect to revisiting that program. One thing we are very sensitive to the agency is making sure that the utilities that are eligible for PCE utilize that program. And we are very sensitive to making sure that that happens. We provide training and technical assistance to those utilities to make sure that they are able to fill that the paperwork out that's necessary. We have asked in our operating budget and a small increment to provide some training funds to provide some extra assistance where we can get folks from utilities. There's a lot of turnover with utility clerks. We like to be able to bring them to Anchorage for some training that we and RCA put on to make sure that the new utility clerks understand the process and the program. In prior years, the Denali Commission had provided funds for that through the Denali Training Fund, and that was one program that they hadn't funded for a while, which is why we moved to having the increment asked for in our operating budget. There was also mention of the data collection and education and outreach need. The Alaska Energy Authority has been leading an energy efficiency conservation working group and has received a US DOE grant. And we are working very, very hard on those issues and addressing the need for education, outreach, and the data collection. There was some comments with respect to the need for capitalization of the Power Project Fund, and I wanted to take the opportunity to remind the committee that there was legislation that authorized the Alaska Energy Authority to sell the portfolio in order to raise funds for new loans, which we did. We completed that. Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority purchased the program and capitalized the fund with additional cash. In addition, the legislature provided a $10 million appropriation to the Power Project Fund. So at the moment, there is sufficient funds in the program to meet current demands for the loan program. But that is one area that we do want to address in making sure that there are the opportunity and making sure that utilities and eligible borrowers know that that fund is available and it can be utilized for their needs. So we will be working further on advancing that and making sure that loan fund is known to be available. And especially since we have seen less federal funds for grants, it is something that we know that there will be additional demand. One of the comments with respect to the governor's report I wanted to just touch on real quickly was the Commercial Energy Efficiency Loan Program. There has been some work being done on that front this interim, and I just wanted to give the committee a bit of an update. When that passed, we had discuss the Alaska Energy Authority to discuss with Commerce with respect to the coordination and the implementation of that program. As the conversations progressed early in the interim, there was the discussion of, well, this is really an energy program. This really should be in the Alaska Energy Authority. So we moved towards developing a way and legislation that would transfer that program to the Alaska Energy Authority. In doing that, it wasn't just a clean transfer of the program. We as looking at the program, Peter and his energy efficiency staff looked at it. There was a realization that there really could be some improvements to make the program more of an emphasis on energy efficiency for the commercial users. So we have been working with that, and as this committee is aware, ADA has a significant program for commercial lending, and so we have some expertise in the building, and we've been working on, well, what's the best type of program to implement? And so we are still, as far as issues and things that we know we need to work on, this is one where we're expecting at this point to have a better idea of what type of legislation that would possibly be supported. Internally, we're still working on some issues. One thing that we are exploring that we think has a great deal of promise is some type of a guarantee program rather than specifically its traditional loan program. So I expect that within the next couple of weeks we should have some additional information and some possibilities and ideas with respect to how we think to address the commercial piece of the puzzle on energy efficiency, how best to address that. With that said, though, I did want to let the committee know that we do have a commercial energy audit program that has been developed, and it's been very successful. It's somewhat of a demonstration program that we've done, that we've started with $462,000 of stimulus funds. Right now, it's expected that this funding will provide about 125 to 150 energy audits for the commercial sector. We've received very, very good responses to that. And I do want to note Sean Scaling and Katie Conway of our staff, who have been phenomenal in really taking the energy efficiency program and, you know, really growing that aspect of the Alaska Energy Authority. Katie's been the primary staff person to lead the Energy Efficiency Conservation Working Group, and Sean has been working very, very diligently on the Commercial Energy Audit Program. And with that, Mr. Chairman, Peter can give an update with respect to the EETF program, and we're, of course, available for questions.
Thank you. And before we begin with you, Peter, the record should reflect that we've been joined by Senator Stedman, so we have the entire committee here. And then also in the back, we have Senator Dyson has joined us, so we want to make sure that that's recognized. So first, any Senator Wilkowski?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. On the Alternative Energy Revolving Loan Fund, certainly appreciate your perspective that you would like to limit it to energy efficiency. However, I think the legislature made a conscious decision last year to go a little bit beyond that and allow organizations, commercial businesses that had, say, wanted to put in a wind turbine or coil piping, for instance, to generate, strip out some heat. I think we made a conscious policy decision to do that. And as the legislature, we're the body that enacts the policy, and the executive enacts the policy or executes the policy. So certainly open to discussion on that, but I think there was a conscious effort by the legislature to include those items when we passed the legislation.
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, we have had conversations with legislative staff who have reminded us of the alternative energy concept of the program. We are not intending that alternative energy wouldn't be a possibility of the program, but we do feel that the emphasis should be on energy efficiency, but certainly understand that this is a this is a process with respect to if we do move towards transferring a loan program to the Alaska Energy Authority, that we would have that as a concept, and of course have discussions with respect to any legislation that would be introduced. Thank you.
Any further questions? Thank you, and Peter, we welcome you as well. Please state for the record who you are and what your position is, and then we welcome your testimony.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. Peter Krimp, Deputy Director of Alternative Energy and Energy Efficiency at Alaska Energy Authority. And I'll just give a quick overview where we are on the Emerging Energy Technology Fund. Just recapping, last year the fund was created by the legislature and allows the Energy Authority to make grants to eligible applicants for demonstration projects for technologies that can be developed within a five-year time frame. So testing emerging energy technologies, improving existing energy technologies, or deploying a technology that hasn't been deployed in Alaska before. We have moved on. I do have a one-page brief sheet that I'd like to provide after we're done. At this point, as Gwen Holdman mentioned, there is $2.4 million in state funds, $3.1 in Denali Commission funds, with the idea that $2.4 of that is to go to into the overall kitty for distributing for projects that are selected by the advisory committee and AEA. First off, I should say that we have staffed the program, and we have a person who is working on it. That person is Barbara Triplett. She's a mechanical engineer with 15 years of experience at Conoco and other oil companies. The first thing that AEA did was to research other energy technology development programs in the country and in other states, and of course work with our close partners at ASEP, University of Alaska, and their precursor, the Arctic Energy Technology Development Laboratory, and Denali Commission, which have conducted similar solicitations to gain their experience as well as we could. The governor appointed the advisory committee in early November 2010, and if you don't mind, I'll just quickly let you know who those people are. It's Eric Erickson with Electric Light and Power, here in Juneau that represents utilities, Carl Reisha from ADA, Brent Petrie with Alaska Village Electric Co-op, that's representing the renewable energy sector. Joel Niemeyer, key person, of course, since the Denali Commission has about half the dollars in it, with the Denali Commission seat. Stephen Trimble with MWH Americas, that's the fossil fuel energy sector seat. Brent Sheets with the Arctic Energy Office of National Energy Technology Lab. Brent, of course, that's the fossil lab, and it's a very important point to make that this is not necessarily a renewable energy technology development. This is all of our energy sources. Then Brian Hirsch with National Renewable Energy Laboratory. We released a solicitation on the 6th of January. And the materials included requests for applications, sample grant agreements, scoring guidelines, et cetera. That RFA is due on March 2nd. We're very interested to see what sort of response it gets, but there is a substantial amount of interest among many sectors that we've seen so far. With that, I guess I'll just stop there. And if there are any questions, I'd be happy to try to field them.
Seeing no questions, but all the committee members do have your handout. That's
oh, okay. So all right, thank you.
That, but thank you to both of you, and congratulations to you.
Thank you.
So now we have Office of Public Assistance, and is it Ron Crayer? Is that getting close anyway?
Quite close. For the record, my name is Ron Crayer. I am the acting director for the Division of Public Assistance, and I'm here to talk about the Alaska Affordable Heating Assistance Program. But before I do, I'd like to introduce to you Susan Marshall, sitting here in the front row. She's the program coordinator for our heating assistance programs. And through her efforts, in a very short period of time, the law was, the 220 was signed into law in June of 2010, and by October 1st of 2010, Susan had managed to get the regulations drafted, had made necessary changes to our system that generates heating assistance benefits, made changes to our application, as well as doing extensive, getting ready for extensive outreach about the new program, so that on October 1st, we were able to start the program up and running. And to date, we have provided home heating assistance, supplements for home heating assistance to over 1,200 family, low-income families. Just by way of background, the Alaska Affordable Heating Assistance Program was designed to very closely mirror our federally funded LIHEAP program, the Low Income Heating and Energy Assistance Program, with two major differences. One, of course, is that the income limits for the affordable heating program are from 151% up to 225% of poverty, with a provision that the income limit could go up to 250% of poverty. But probably the most significant part of it is that the amount of money that we pay to households is tied to the average price of a barrel of North Slope crude during the prior fiscal year. So we have the, based on the price of oil, the statute mandates how much we have to pay households, and the payments are made on what is referred to as a community heating point. You may have a handout from us as well. This year, because the price of oil last fiscal year, was $75.20, we're making payments at $140 for both programs, the Alaska Affordable Heating Program and our LIHEAP program as well. Last year, we served well over 19,000 households between the state program and the tribal programs. And to date, we are probably about 30% over what we were this time, where we were this time last year with the state-funded program. We have 1,200-plus families served to date. Last year, about this time, under what was then the Alaska Heating Assistance Program, ACHAP, we had only served 900 families. This is partially because of our Susan's excellent outreach efforts, but probably also because of interest in the new program. Even though our numbers are still fairly much the same, even with this new program, we are still serving the most needy families in those income brackets. The majority of the folks are between 150 and 175% of poverty, 151, excuse me, and 175% of poverty. And we anticipate that it will be very similar to our federally funded program and just our entire thing, where we will probably see 60 to 70% of the family households served through these programs are going to be households with elders over the age of 60, individuals with disabilities, and households with children under the age of 5. So while the Affordable Heating Assistance Program is a very small part of a very significant bill, it is making a big difference in the lives of many, many Alaskans. So we really appreciate its inclusion in this this legislation, and we're quite pleased to say that the program is moving apace, meeting the needs of households in Alaska, and I think we're doing quite well in that regard. We've got right now, I think 7 out of our 11 tribal programs are operating regional affordable heating assistance programs, and for those areas that are not, the state is providing services for families in those communities like Yakutat, Seldovia, and so forth. Wanted to keep it very brief. I know you've got a lot on your plate. I'll be happy to answer any questions, and I have Susan here. If you ask any, I can't.
Any questions? Thank you very much for the report. It was enlightening to hear that your results. We next have, yeah, thank you very much, and to Susan as well. And we have now Joel St. Aubin from DOTPF, Department of Transportation. Oh, he's on the phone? All right, so is Is Joel there?
Yes. For the record, my name is Joel St. Aubin. I am the Chief of Statewide Public Facilities for DOT. I'm going to give a update on how we've been coming into compliance with Senate Bill 220. Senate Bill 220 required DOT to work with other state agencies to retrofit at least 25% of state buildings that are in excess of 10,000 square feet no later than January 1st of 2020. To begin this effort, the department is currently gathering utility bills from the past 2 years for all facilities that are over 10,000 square feet. Most of the agencies have provided this information, and we are generating energy use indexes in order to prioritize the buildings from least to most energy efficient. This will be an ongoing process, and we'll utilize the information gathered from the implementation of the standardized methodology for state agencies to collect and store energy consumption and expense data. The department has worked with the Alaska Energy Authority to collaborate on this approach to prioritizing the facilities as required by SB 220. Additionally, as we implement this, we anticipate that we will group projects together by location, and it will assist in expediting project completions, reducing project costs, and maximizing our resources. However, it may mean that one group of facilities may include multiple departments and multiple funding sources, and that energy retrofits to facilities may not be completed in the exact order of their energy use index may indicate. Concurrently, we have issued an RFP for energy performance contracting and are negotiating with three energy service companies to provide services under that agreement. We anticipate that the three contracts will be awarded this month and that audits will begin in March and implementation of energy efficiency projects will start this summer. Initial funding for the energy efficiency retrofit projects will come from a grant through the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act. AHFC has received, I believe, $40 million from DOE, $10 million of which has been allocated to state buildings. And this funding must be expended by March of 2012 under the terms of the ERA Act. Once those funds are committed, funding of energy retrofit projects will be through the Alaska Energy Efficiency Revolving Loan Fund. And it is possible that projects that we do this summer will be a combined ERA funding and loan funding if the projects exceed available ERA funding for an individual department. I would also like to mention that prior to the enactment of SB 220, the department had previously completed energy retrofit projects under two phases of energy performance contracting. The first phase of energy performance contracting, which was completed in 2006, has resulted in energy cost avoidance of $366,000 in its first year. The second phase, completed in 2009, has resulted in $793,000 of cost avoidance in its first year. In all, 16 facilities, 5 for the Department of Administration, 3 for DOT, and 8 for the Department of Corrections, have been made more energy efficiency through this program. And that's roughly 10% of state facilities that are over 10,000 square feet. And that is brings us to where we are today. I can take any questions.
We thank you very much. I do not see any questions. And yes, we do, Senator McGuire.
Thank you so much. And you might have said it, and I didn't catch it. I caught the savings for the two facilities that were done prior to 220. Any chance you've got the numbers for the savings on the 16 facilities, which are 10% of the state's facilities over 10,000 square feet?
Yes, those are, Senator McGuire, through the chair, the two numbers that I mentioned, the 366,000 and the 793,000, represent the 16 facilities. The 366,000 was for the first 8 facilities, and the 793,000 were for the second 8 Department of Correction facilities.
Great. Thank you so much.
We also have a question by Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What's your estimate on how quickly the amount that has been spent will be paid off? What's the return? Is it 3 years, 5 years, 10 years?
Senator Wilikowski, through the chair, the work that we have done to date under performance contracting have different financing terms. The shortest was 10 years. The longest was 15 years for in terms of payback.
But if I could, Mr. Chair, in terms of the amount of savings that you're getting, you're getting roughly $1 million is my estimate per year on those 16 buildings. How quickly will we make up what was spent through the savings?
Senator Wilikowski, through the chair, I believe we're on track to our savings are exceeding what our loan payments are, so we should recoup that initial amount sooner than the 10 years for the first projects. I'm guessing it's probably closer to 8 years, and for the second group that had been financed at 15 years, it's probably on track for 10 to 12 years.
All right, thank you.
Thank you very much, Joel, for your testimony, and I do not see any further questions. So, again, thank you. We also online have, with respect to compressed natural gas, we have Diana Rodkus with Department of Transportation Public Facilities.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Diana Rodkus, and I'm the fleet manager for the state of Alaska. Senate Bill 220 required that the Department of Transportation State Equipment Fleet prepare a report on the feasibility of using compressed natural gas to power vehicles in the state, and also make a recommendation and proposal for a pilot program if it was found to be feasible. The final report was released on January 31st, and I believe that everyone has been provided a copy. It was produced by Mercury & Associates, and it did conclude that compressed natural gas is a feasible fuel for certain Alaska fleets, and expansion of the program would be beneficial toward Alaska's sustainability efforts. The pilot program that's recommended would enhance the existing compressed natural gas fuel infrastructure that is located within the Anchorage Bowl. It would increase the number of vehicles and equipment using compressed natural gas, including new state light-duty vehicles, 4 school buses for the Anchorage School District, 4 solid waste trucks, and 2 transit buses for the municipality of Anchorage. It would also establish a fuel management system for the state bulk fuel tanks to manage existing fuel use and future program savings, and also designate an intergovernmental program coordinator who would be responsible for facilitating finding external financial support, such as federal grants, to allow the state to move to the next phase, working with the municipality of Anchorage to acquire clean city status, which also opens doors for federal grants, and to get significant buy-in from the public and private sector for long-term sustainability of the project. I have provided a one-page summary of the report, and I have nothing further. I can take questions.
Yes, there's a question by Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you. I don't have the report right in front of me. Could you just briefly talk about what policy recommendations for us to implement this program, if you have any?
Senator Wilikowski, through the chair, at this point, we just received the report on January 31st, and the department is going through it and fine-tuning all of the recommendations that they gave us with the background.
You should know that I do not believe that anyone here has a copy of the document that you're referencing. So if you could forward that to my office, and then I can distribute that, because no one here has it.
I will do so, Mr. Chairman.
All right, thank you very much. Any further questions regarding compressed natural gas? Yes, we have Senator McGuire.
Thank you. And through the chair, not a question, but just a point that we have a bill in our office. I cannot remember the bill number right off the top of my head, but that provides a state tax incentive for vehicles that are hybrid or compressed natural gas. or electric in nature, and I just would love to have you, as you're analyzing the report, to take into account the hypothetical passage of that bill and what that might do as well to reduce the numbers on the state of transportation, on the Department of Transportation's purchase of a fleet. I don't know, and I don't know if the Department of Transportation is exempt from paying state taxes on vehicles. I don't know the answer to that.
Senator McGuire, through the chair, yes, we are exempt from paying those state taxes, and I was provided with a copy of your bill.
Great. Thank you.
Again, thank you. No further questions from the committee, and we will conclude this Senate Bill 220 overview with, I believe it's Jerry Burnett from the Department of Revenue. Here he is. I understand he's going to be talking about the Municipal Energy Improvements Financing Program.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Department in Senate Bill 220,
please identify yourself for the record.
For the record, my name is Jerry Burnett. I'm the Deputy Commissioner for Treasury in the Department of Revenue. The Department of Revenue was tasked with a report to the legislature on the feasibility of a municipal energy improvements financing program. We did such a report. It was submitted on January 31st. You should all have had a copy of that report. The tax-assessed property financing for energy improvements is a new concept that was created in 2008 in California. It's not dissimilar from the way municipalities finance local improvement districts for water, sewer, sidewalks, paving, etc. But it's a voluntary priority lien against a property. Subsequent to the passage of 220, the Federal Housing Finance Agency issued a statement that urged state and local governments to reconsider such programs and called for a pause in such programs so concerns can be addressed. First liens for such loans represent a key alteration of traditional mortgage lending practice, present significant risk to lenders and secondary mortgage entities, and may alter valuations for mortgage-backed securities and are not essential for successful programs to spur energy conservation. That's a quote from the statement. There are 20 states that have such programs, and they're working with the Federal Housing Financing Agency to resolve some of those issues. We looked at it, if it were allowable and practical, and I have some recommendations specific to Alaska. Alaska has 162 local government entities that would have the authority to do property tax assessments. 38 of them currently do property tax assessments. So if we could work with the Federal Housing Finance Agency and establish that this type of program can be constructed and conform with national mortgage underwriting standards, then we believe that it would be a practical program. Local governments would have to be allowed to create what we call PACE districts, property assessment, clean energy financing districts. Local governments would have ongoing administration for the property tax collection and lien implementation, but there would have to be a statewide issuer of bonds to provide for local government financing need, ensuring accessibility to smaller communities and efficiency, and uniform statewide standards like those used by HFC for the Home Energy Rebate Program for determining energy savings at allowable costs under the program. And that if creating a PACE program is a priority, that consideration be given to providing for a capital appropriation for a revolving loan fund, eliminating the need to borrow from third parties in the short term. That revolving loan fund could then refinance and produce additional capital once a stream of payments were coming from the local government entities. I looked at, in writing the report, at the savings that were generated from the home rebate program, the energy rebate program in Alaska Housing, and of those that have been paid so far, with $10,000 in average actual outlay, a little over $10,000 in outlay, an average of $1,580 in annual energy savings. So it would appear that such a loan program would be practical in paying off, you know, for those programs. Those same repairs could have been paid with a loan program of this type over a period of 10 years or less. So it's a matter of working with the Federal Housing Finance Authority and getting national standards in place before this can be done.
So is it safe to say it's working?
It's safe to say that it's not working anywhere right now. It would work.
Yeah, it would work.
And I know California actually has litigation with the Federal Housing Finance Authority because they have a number of programs. And like I said, there are 20 states that have these programs that work. So.
Questions for Jerry? Senator McGuire.
Thank you, and through the chair, and thank you for your years of service, Jerry, to the state. You've been here for a long time, and you have great institutional knowledge and a great sense of these things. So if you could just find time to get with Senator Wilikowski and I to let us know what we can do to help you in your endeavor here to really make this come into fruition. You see what we're driving at. You can mm-hmm. see the savings and the potential. Certainly, we don't want to end up with the state in litigation. I don't think that's the end goal. That's expensive, time-consuming, et cetera. So whatever you think that we can do in terms of tweaking language, working with you, we want to do that.
Okay. To the chair, Senator McGuire, thank you. And I know Senator Egan had such a proposal last year, and we'll be working with his office. Devin Mitchell is our debt manager, and, you know, I'm available, he's available to talk about financing issues at any time.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Well, that concludes the presentations on Senate Bill 220. I think it was informative to the committee, and again, on behalf of the entire committee, I do thank the prior year's co-chairs, Senator Wilikowski and Senator McGuire. It's a major piece of legislation, and I think it should be followed to see it towards its implementation. With that, our next meeting will be Friday at 3:30 p.m. on February 4th. This meeting is adjourned. It is approximately 10 minutes to 5 p.m.